Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Keyser here with you on this Friday morning. And as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program. Jared, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm super. How are you guys?
We are super. Excellent. As well. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Jared, Trevor Lawrence, 5 years, $275 million, $55 million per year if you care about that, $142 million fully guaranteed. It's a lot of money for Trevor Lawrence. It's not necessarily surprising given what the quarterback market is right now, but good time to be a quarterback. What did you make of that deal for Trevor Lawrence and for the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Well, I actually did the math about 10 minutes ago. If the Jags decided, you know what, we're not going to give you Joe Burrow money. Like, we just don't think you're that good. If they had decided, hey, you're going to play on your salary this year, you're going to play the fifth-year option next year, we're going to tag you, and then we're going to tag you again. Jacksonville would be looking at paying him over the next 4 years about $27 million a season. So they're going to pay him about, and again, you're right about the APY. It doesn't really ever matter, but that's what people seem to love to talk about. So for the sake of argument, we'll talk about the APY. And for the quarterback contracts, those are essentially guaranteed until the very, very end. So usually the APY is at least somewhat accurate. Instead, they're going to pay him $55 million a year. So we're talking about a difference of almost $30 million a season. Now, off the top of my head, $30 million extra for this season alone can buy you Tony Pollard, Chidobe Awuzie, Lloyd Cushenberry, Tyler Boyd, and I think Kenneth Murray.
Yep.
Like, I mean, that's five starters that you could buy. Now, you can't, again, you know, Calvin Ridley's $24 million or whatever it is. But, I mean, I just don't think Trevor Lawrence is that good. And, I look, again, the market is the market. And Lawrence probably was in this. He wasn't going to get the next guy contract that was higher than Joe Burrow. But he was going to get the next guy contract off of Jared Goff's 53. And so what's the difference between 54 and 55 and – so it's the next guy contract, which Lawrence probably is entitled to. Jacksonville is signing this contract to get out in front because they look at when Josh Allen signed his next guy contract at the, I believe, at the beginning of the 2021 season, and that was $43 million a year. And that was like, wow, $43 million. And now, like, that's, I mean, Josh Allen's on the cheap at $43 million a year. So I see why Jacksonville's getting out in front. Dak's going to sign, Tua's going to sign, and then after that, Brock Purdy's going to sign. And by the time we get to C.J. Stroud, I mean, we may be talking about $60, $65 million a year for these quarterbacks. But I don't know if you can win the Super Bowl with Trevor Lawrence. And it makes it very hard for me to pay a quarterback that kind of money. Again, knowing that the cap's fake, but the money's not. I just don't know if I can pay a quarterback that kind of money if I don't think he can win the Super Bowl.
So does this mean your boy Tua is about to get paid about $58 million per year?
Dude, I think Tua may be the breaking point here. Because remember, the owner of the Dolphins got suspended because he was trying to get rid of Tua.
Yep.
Like, I think it's such an underrated part of all of this Tua negotiation talk is the guy that actually is going to sign the check is a guy who 2 years ago did not even like him. And so, again, the other part of this is what I just said about winning the Super Bowl. I don't think you can win the Super Bowl with Lawrence, but I don't know that you can't win the Super Bowl with Lawrence. I feel like I know that you can't win the Super Bowl with Tua. Like, do you think you can win a Super Bowl with Tua?
I don't. I mean, is anything possible? Sure. But would I? No, I would not bet that at all. No.
And so I'm the owner of the Dolphins. And I'm 80, I think he's like 82 years old or something like that. I mean, he is an old peepop. And how many more years on this planet do you have? And obviously these guys want to win Super Bowls or else they wouldn't own the teams. Some of them are in it for the money, but really the money is made by the maturation of the asset. And again, the guy's in his 80s. So I think he, you know, I think he wants to win. I think that's why he tried to get Tom Brady and he tried to get Sean Payton and he got suspended for it because he wants to win. So he doesn't believe in Tua, or at least he didn't 2 years ago. He wants to win, and his time is finite. If you sign Tua to a contract, that means that the quarterback of your team for the rest of your life might be Tua. How do you feel about that? And so I don't know, you know, again, can they, Tua's on the fifth year option this year. And so then the two tags would only be 3 years. But if I were the Dolphins, you know, I don't like Tua, but if I were the Dolphins, I'd take Tua out to the market. I'd say, hey, I'll give you Tua for 3 first-round picks or 2 first-round picks in a second or something like that. Somebody's going to be desperate enough for a starting quarterback. I mean, the Atlanta Falcons just spent a gazillion dollars in the 8th pick on 2 of them. So who wants Tua? Somebody's got to believe. And then I'd start over, but I don't think they're going to do that. So I don't know where this is headed with Tua. But, oof, if I own that team, I would be so miserable having to decide over this. With Lawrence and Dak, even though I don't think you can win the Super Bowl with those guys, I still think I'd pay them because I'm not sure that there's any chance of getting anybody better.
So, Jared, because Joe isn't here today, I will play the role of Joe.
And the Jared antagonist?
And quibble with a take of yours.
Maybe a quieter version.
Yeah. I'm not gonna yell at you. You know me. I'm not a yeller.
Joe only yells when he's like he's wrong, and so then he starts making it about like, the plane from Green Bay that like as was discussed yesterday on our program, we still didn't think at the time was all that crazy to think. But continue on.
Either way. So if I mischaracterize anything you have said while I'm explaining this, you feel free to stop me. So sure. I know that you have expressed concern over the amount of positivity that has emanated from St. Thomas Sports Park during the offseason. And you opened your show yesterday talking about Brian Callahan's appearance on Adam Schefter's podcast when he continued to heap praise on Will Levis. I guess this is the question I would have. What should Brian Callahan say in this situation? Because here's how I see it. Brian Callahan is a first-time head coach. And our perception, and our being like not just here in Nashville, but nationally as well, for people who don't pay as close attention to the Titans, which we've talked about a lot, our perception of Brian Callahan as a head coach in the NFL largely hinges on the success of Will Levis. So if you're Brian Callahan, why wouldn't you want to continually pump up your young quarterback? What should he be saying in these situations when he's asked about his excitement level working with Will Levis?
Did I say he shouldn't say it?
I'm not saying, I don't recall you saying that he shouldn't say it.
I
but
mean, if he thinks
you appear
it,
to
I
have an issue with
if he,
with
no
with
if
it.
He thinks it, then great. I mean, like, good. Here's my thing. If he doesn't think it and then they go out there week 1 and he's terrible and the season continues along and they're terrible, all of a sudden we're going to be bringing up about the fact that, well, wait a minute, I thought this guy was just, I mean, I thought he had the work ethic and the mentality of Peyton Manning and Joe Burrow. I mean, what are we doing here? And I think that it runs the risk of damaging the credibility. I mean, we still talk about some of the things Rand Carthon said over the last year and a half that I bet he wishes he had back. And so I guess what I'm saying is right now, like I actually talked about this yesterday, as a fan, like just a Titan fan, all I want is for the Titans to have a good quarterback. All I want is for the Titans to have the kind of quarterback, not like Lawrence or Dak or Tua, where we're sitting there saying, can you win the Super Bowl with this guy? But the guy like Burrow or Allen or, you know, it's like, yes, this team can win the Super Bowl. That's all us Titan fans want. Everybody knows that. We've never really had that other than McNair. And even McNair was really, really good, but I'm not sure that he was, like, consistently year in and year out.
Upper crust.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's all. And so as a fan, I get excited when I hear this quarterback guru coach come in here and just start, you know, just humping praise all over my quarterback. It gets me excited. But if he's not, then all of a sudden, you know, how does that kind of bring everybody down, given that, I mean, all of the statistics and numbers and rankings and everything else tell you that Levis had a terrible year last year, which, again, we know the context of the year,
yeah.
But that doesn't mean that Levis isn't terrible, right? Like, we know the line sucks. We know Vrabel's coaching staff was terrible. We know the receivers were awful. But that doesn't mean that Levis is good. Like, we don't know that. And so what happens when the coach comes in here and is just positive, 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 is I think it raises the bar a little bit. And, Robbie, I don't know what Matt LaFleur was saying last year when it came to Jordan Love, but was it this effusive?
No, it was very measured.
And so that, like, that's
and then
what
later
I'm
in the
about.
Season, it was not. It was over the top. But later in the season, he played great.
And so that's where I'm like, okay, again, knowing that Brian Callahan is one of these quarterback gurus, is Brian Callahan pumping the tires of Will Levis because he got here, watched him on the field, and said, holy crap, we've got something? Or is it because, you know, Vrabel beat them down so bad that Brian Callahan was kind of told, hey, you know, our players need a they need some positive reinforcement more so than anything else. And so every question to every player or about every player is, he's doing great. You know, Nicholas Petit-Frere never practices, but he's doing great. And Tavondre Sweat doesn't practice, but he's great. And they're all great. And I worry that maybe Brian Callahan is setting the expectations for the fans or the excitement level for the fans a little too high.
Let's switch gears quickly. I liked what you said yesterday. You were talking about the Predators for a couple segments. You talked about how the Predators are supposed to get those younger players, those difference-making young players, without A, being bad, or B, trading UC Saros. And I think I texted this to you yesterday. I'm curious for your thoughts. He's not a young player. Like, he's not a 21, 22, 23-year-old player, but he's 26, a young 26. What are your thoughts on buying low, potentially, on Patrick Laine, who is reportedly wanting a fresh start and does not want to be in Columbus anymore?
I mean, if you had called me 5 years ago and said that you were thinking about something like that, I would be very, very interested. At this point, I can't remember the last time I ever heard Patrick Laine do anything on the ice.
Probably when he left Winnipeg.
Well, I mean, in all seriousness, like, that would be like saying, you know, Jared, if you're not a believer in Will Levis, what do you think about going and getting Carson Wentz? It's like, well, you know, right. Carson Wentz was good in 2017. You know, I mean, that's kind of how I feel about Patrick Laine, which is really disappointing from a player standpoint, because when Laine was first on the scene, I'm like, that guy's awesome. I mean, he and Blake Wheeler and that whole team, you know, that was a really, really, really good team. We all remember it. And we, I mean, when they beat the Predators in the playoffs, it wasn't like a that team didn't deserve it kind of thing. That team deserved it. That was a good team. And he was a very big part of that good team. And he had all the makings of the big boy forward. And it just, for whatever reason, it didn't work. I mean, I'm not saying this is like Cody Glass, where it's like, well, you know, he was picked high in the draft, because Line A actually is an NHL player, but I don't think that we're looking at kind of the Jack Eichel effect here, that they bring him in here and all of a sudden, now that he's in a different spot, he recaptures the magic and becomes a star. I just think that Laine would almost be, you know, that's where, and I think the quarterback analogy is actually pretty good here. We're so desperate for a high-end scoring forward that now we're talking ourselves into something, right? Like, we're talking ourselves into somebody who's really not a superstar right now, but we're saying, you know, maybe he possibly could be a superstar, and he could. And Adam, that was the thing you kept pushing back on Matt Duchene. You kept saying all of the stats say he's not a superstar. And yet David Poile was convinced he was a superstar because he was so desperate for a superstar, and the fans believed everything that they were told, and so everybody thought they were getting a superstar. And I just don't think that Laine is a superstar anymore. I thought he had potential to be a superstar, but he's not that. And I keep wondering, like, where are the superstars coming from in this lifetime? Because while they have all these draft choices, as we're seeing with Yaroslav Askarov, I mean, it may take 14 years before that guy's ready. You know, he may have to go to kindergarten through 12th grade before he's ready to play in the NHL, according to Willie. So I just don't. If you do not trade this goalie, I do not know how this team gets good young players in any sort of relative future.
Jared, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. A nice calm visit today on the program, and we'll talk to you next week.
Guys, take care of yourself. It was a very, very warm and lovely visit.
It was. Jared Stillman joins us every Friday morning at 7 o'clock. We'll take your thoughts on what Jared had to say. We'll get into the Line A part of this because he was connected to the Nashville Predators yesterday. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Appreciate Jared Stillman for being with us in the last segment. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers on the road. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch at 6:05. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. SoundsBaseball.com. Sounds Baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, Five Points Roofing, Caudill Vet Clinic, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Adam, you brought up Patrick Laine, who is currently under contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's got two more years left on his deal at an $8.7 million cap hit. So Laine has been a very talented player. Now, he was most effective very early in his career with the Winnipeg Jets, has since kind of been searching for it, and this past season was pretty much a total wash because if memory serves me correctly, Adam, he got put in the NHL Player Assistance Program.
Yes.
And played in a grand total of, let's see here, 18 games this last year. So
yes,
you would be taking on someone that has not played a ton recently.
His last game was December 14th.
Yeah.
So he missed basically the entire second half of the season. I think he was injured. Like, that's why he missed initially.
Yeah.
And then he entered the player assistance program in January and missed the rest of the season. And there has been reporting over the past few days that Patrick Laine and his agent are working with the Blue Jackets, who have a new GM, Don Waddell, formerly of the Carolina Hurricanes, to find a fresh start for Laine. Remember, Laine was traded, if I'm not mistaken, 1-for-1 for Pierre-Luc Dubois. So
that worked out great.
No, I'm sorry. It was not 1-for-1. It was Laine and Jack Roslovic for a third-round pick in Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now, Roslovic ended up with the Rangers at the trade deadline, played on their first line a lot with Kreider and Zibanejad. But anyway, so when a player like this becomes available, the first thing we talk about is, okay, who could he, where could he go? Who could fit him in? Where would he fit? And I stumbled upon a video on TSN with Frankie Corrado, who's a TSN analyst, former NHL player, talking about his three best fits for Patrick Laine. And you'll never guess who was number one on that list.
And number one, Gino, the Nashville Predators. Andrew Brunette has shown over the time that he's been a head coach in the NHL that he knows how to coach skilled players. He did it with Jonathan Huberdeau when he was in Florida. And this year, you take a look at a guy like Gus Nyquist, who in his mid-30s just had his best offensive season. The Nashville Predators and Andrew Brunette know how to get the most out of skilled players and utilize them properly.
Okay, so let's start with a couple things here. Number one, let's just make it clear out of the gate. I have no interest in Patrick Laine at $8.7 million per year.
I do not either.
Absolutely none.
No.
And I don't think anybody else is going to either.
No,
like I would be very surprised if Columbus, when they trade him here, doesn't have to retain some salary.
No.
So the question is, how much salary are they going to retain? At what point would you be comfortable entertaining the deal? But for starters, at $8.7 million, there's 0% chance that I consider this.
So if they retain 50%, that would be 4.35 for Patrick Laine. If they retain 25%, it would be 6.525.
Yeah.
So Patrick Laine at less than $5 million, I would take a chance on Patrick Laine.
Which would be for the next 2 years.
For the next two seasons. And look, you're not getting the Patrick Laine that took the league by storm as a young player with the Winnipeg Jets. He scored 80 goals in his first two seasons.
As an 18 and 19-year-old.
Yeah, it was, you know, as Jared said, you know, he was a big part of those Winnipeg teams that, you know, went head-to-head with the Predators, you know, with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and Dustin Byfuglien, those players. And I'm looking to see how much, it does not appear that the, they have not retained salary. It doesn't appear that they've retained salary.
So they have no spots taken for that.
Right. Okay. So that doesn't appear to
be. You get three.
Yes. That does not appear to be an issue. But, you know, one issue with Laine recently has been his availability. As we mentioned, played in 18 games last season and missed the second half of the season in the player assistance program. In his first full season in Columbus, he played 56 out of 82 games, but he was a point per game player. He had 26 goals and 56 points in 56 games. The following year, he had 22 goals and 52 points in 55 games. So still a productive player. And as I said, you're not acquiring Laine to be the player he was 6-7 years ago. But he still possesses otherworldly shooting talent, which is something the Predators don't have a lot of. And if he is, you know, if he is a guy that you put on your second line and he starts in a line that gets almost all of its shifts in the offensive zone and you put him on your power play and he's shooting one-timers, I think it could help. I agree. If Columbus is looking to unload the full freight, no thank you.
Yeah.
That would make him the highest
paid. It's not going to happen.
It would make him the highest paid forward on the team.
Yeah, like no way they're going to be able to do that.
He makes more money than Philip Forsberg on a per season basis. But if Columbus is willing to retain half of that and you get line A for two seasons at $4.35 million against the cap, I would take a risk on that for sure.
So the question is, what would you have to give up? We'll get into that coming up next. Take your thoughts. What would you make of, at a discounted rate, the idea of adding Patrick Laine if you're the Nashville Predators? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Kieser here with you on this Friday morning, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We are right around the corner from the 615 Open. Come play golf with us and do some good at the same time. You're invited to the 615 Open, presented by Gary Force Acura, Thursday, June 20th at Hermitage Golf Course. Come golf with celebrities on a beautiful course with all the proceeds going to Souls for Souls, who helps local kids in need. There's going to be a lot of fun out there. We do this every year. Can't wait to see you out there. And you can get more info now at 615open.com. Discussing the potential acquisition of Patrick Laine. He wants out of Columbus, wants a fresh start. Columbus looks like they're going to work with him to try to make that happen. People have connected the Predators as a possible landing spot for Patrick Laine. We've gone over the cap hit, Adam. There's no way I'm interested to find the Predators at $8.7 million per year. Let's say Columbus retained half the salary. What do you think, with a salary retention involved, it would take in a trade in order to land Patrick Laine?
If the Blue Jackets are going to retain half the salary, you're going to have to make it worth their while. I imagine that means a premium, at least a premium draft pick. It might be multiple of those second-round picks that you have. It may be one of the first-round picks that you have. That's
leverage do they have?
I mean,
the player wants out.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with Natchez, right? We talked about this with Natchez. I compared it to Alex DeBrincat the other day. It is a good question, but I mean, you're right. What leverage do the Blue Jackets have? But they're not going to give him away.
No.
So,
but I'm not giving up a first-round pick.
I would agree.
I'm probably
with that.
Not giving up a second-round pick. I know they've got a ton of them, so maybe that makes it a little bit more expendable if you're the Predators. Me personally, I'm not giving up a second-round pick.
Okay, that's fair. You drive a hard bargain. You know where the Blue Jackets are in their trajectory. I wonder if you could build a deal mostly on futures.
You might.
So, you know, are there certain prospects you'd be willing to give up? Would you give up someone like Igor Afanasyev as part of a deal for Patrick Laine?
Yes.
Would you give up someone like, I'm trying to think. Like what would be your package? Like what kind of thing would you put together?
My package would probably be, you better retain half the salary, and I will give you a third-round pick and maybe a guy like Afanasyev. I got to give you that. I'm not giving – like, to me, if you're the Predators, you're buying super low.
Yes.
Super low. If it's much more than that, then I just don't have a lot of interest. Like, I think there are other options out there that you can target in free agency or via trade that don't carry the risk that Laine carries with him. Like – look, I agree with you. I still think he's got something left in the tank. He's only 25. So he's got something left in the tank. But beyond the player assistant stuff, and I don't know specifically what's happening there and what's going on with him, and I hope everything's fine. But the ability to stay healthy has been a huge problem with him too. Like, he can't stay healthy. So there's the risk of he's not as productive as he was coming in the league. You're still, even though you're only taking half salary in this scenario, I mean, it's not a nothing investment at $4.3 million per year. And the guy can't stay healthy. So if I'm doing this, if I'm the Predators, I'm buying super low or I'm turning my attention elsewhere. Like there's just more, there's more options out there, I think.
Yeah, it's there. Like we've said, there is an element of risk involved. There's always an element of risk involved. But with this player, the fact that he hasn't been able to stay in the lineup, the fact that he is in the player assistance program, which good for him for stepping away from the game and taking care of himself. But you know, when will he be available? Because I don't think he's been cleared from that program yet. You need to be cleared. Yeah. And I don't think that's happened yet. So we'll see when that will happen. But as a, I agree with you, as a buy low trade, I like the potential benefit just because although Line A hasn't played well relative to how he did early in his career, he didn't forget how to score.
Right.
Like he still has that talent. And as Frankie Corrado said on the clip we played from TSN, Andrew Brunette knows how to squeeze the offensive talent out of certain guys. You know, he mentioned Jonathan Huberdeau, who had a, you know, who finished fifth in MVP voting in his one season with Brunette.
Nyquist last year.
I mean, I would argue that they definitely got more out of Ryan O'Reilly offensively than I expected.
Yep.
I mean, Philip Forsberg had his best season ever under Andrew Brunette. So I'm wondering if Brunette could work some of his magic on Line A. And like you said, it's about keeping expectations, you know, realistic. You're not acquiring Line A to be on your first line and be your leading scorer.
Yeah.
You would be trading for Line A to be a member of your top six who would probably be more of a power play specialist. But the Predators could always use an extra hand on the power play.
I do wonder, like from you, they've got a ton of cap room. We've talked about that, $26 million. So there is room for them to take some flyers on guys if they want to. If they get through the free agency part of this, and, you know, everybody's talking about Stamkos, which is not going to happen. Like, I'd be stunned if he's not in Tampa. Otherwise, why are they making the Ryan McDonagh trade? Everybody's talking about Reinhart. Like, Reinhart is playing great for Florida. They're getting ready to win a Stanley Cup. I would assume Florida's going to try to do everything they can possibly do to bring him back. So if you don't land some of the big targets in free agency, either because they don't ultimately get to free agency or because they sign elsewhere, like how do you build out? You know, Barry Trotz talked about building out the top nine, right, and strengthening the top nine. Well, how do you go about doing that if you're the Predators? I do think, like, you're the general point of this, I'm on board with, of you might have to take a risk or two on players that either have some baggage with them, have had some injury issues that they dealt with in the past, that haven't worked out in their most previous stop, that you can identify and think will work out now. You know, somebody else has texted in talking about, you know, Line A not defensively responsible, which I hear that. Honestly, I'm not going to say I don't care about it, but I'll take a flyer on a guy that's got some offensive pop, even if he's not, you know, defensively overly reliable. Now, I don't want a team full of that because eventually you do have to, you know, you got to defend. You got to be responsible on your own end. They got a lot of guys at forward right now that can do that, that can take care of stuff in their own end. So I'm not opposed to the general idea of taking a risk on a guy. I just don't know, like, I'm not willing to pay like a super premium in order to do it, if that makes any sense.
Well, one comparison comes to mind, and it's unfortunate that part of the comparison, this is not part of the comparison, but they have both been in the NHL player assistance program, is Valerie Nichushkin.
Yeah.
Nichushkin, you know, he got off to a pretty rocky, you know, he got off to a good start in, he started at 18 years old, just like Laine did with the Stars. And he had 34 points in 79 games, 14 goals, 20 assists in his first season. Then in his next two seasons, he played a combined 87 games and had 9 goals.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm sorry.
Including a year in 2018-19 where he scored 0 goals in 57 games.
That's correct, actually. So let me add that up. So he scored 14 goals in his first season, 14 goals in 79 games. He had 9 goals in his next 144 games.
Yeah.
And they bought him out. And he went to Colorado, who signed him on the cheap, and he's become a really good player. He was great for them when they won the Stanley Cup. He was playing, I think he scored like his first 5 or 6 games of the playoffs this year.
He was a leading goal scorer in the playoffs.
Yeah, until he was suspended for violating the player assistance program. But Nichushkin is another player who, you know, had a lot of high expectations, didn't work out, you know, in his first club, got moved. You know, the Avalanche bought low, and they reaped the rewards for several years. So I'm wondering if Laine could be that kind of player, like whether it's the Predators or someone else. They buy low on Laine, and they get a motivated player. And look, I'm not expecting him to score 40 goals again.
Yeah.
But he's talented enough in a full season to score you at least 30, and that's valuable. So if the Predators are one of those teams sniffing around it, I think it's worth looking at. I agree. It has to be at a discounted rate. If Columbus is insistent on getting rid of all of it,
then they're not going to trade.
Then they're not going to trade.
Yeah, I think they've got to have some level of realism, and maybe it's not half the salary. Maybe I don't know. Maybe they retain 25%. I don't know what the number is. Maybe they can find somebody out there willing to take it. But they have to know heading into this that nobody's taking that contract at $8.7 million per year. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning here on the program. We will do that next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road on 1025 The Game.
Okay. Did I say Rex Road right?
Rex Road.
Rex Road. Okay, let me do that again.
No worries.
What's up? This is Scott Stapp from Creed, and you're listening to Robbie and Rex Road on 1025 The Game.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Or Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here
Never
on the program.
Never gets old.
No, that's going to be, I think, forever the greatest audio clip ever associated with this program. You know, we've got some good ones. You know, there's the Skiatika stuff that Rex Road threw out there when he was trying to pronounce sciatica. There's the Paul Kuharsky,
I smoke weed constantly. Constantly.
Which is always a good one. But it's going to be hard to top the Scott Stapp, Robbie, and Rex Road.
What about the Rex Road rapping to
That was
gin,
good.
Gin and Juice.
That one's kind of it's a different. There's that one, too. Folder keeps growing with Nick Kieser.
Oh, man. I hope Joe's enjoying his vacation.
I think one of my favorite parts about that clip is like Haley, who was recording that stuff with Scott Stapp, was trying to be nice. And was like, "Oh, it's all good. Yeah, it's no big deal. No worries. You can leave it. You don't even have to say Rex Road if you don't want to. Just leave it Rex Road." It was awesome. I wish he just wouldn't have said anything and he would have just gone with Rex Road. But it was the way that the clip played out in its totality made it better.
I think Scott Stapp had heard how much Joe detests his music.
I think you might be right.
And therefore wanted to ingratiate himself to Joe.
I think you might
which,
be right.
Which is a friend of Scott Stapp.
Went total heel and said, you know what, I know what this guy's name is. I'm calling him Rex Road anyway.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know how many platinum records Creed has, argue about the state of music that Creed is a multi-platinum artist, but Scott Stapp is successful. He can't argue with that.
So, in this conversation with Laine, it's fun as we're kind of talking through this. It leads me to what I think is the plight of a lot of Predators fans right now, especially if you've been a fan around here for a while. Doesn't it kind of feel like we're having the same conversation every year of, man, you know, the Predators could really use some goal scoring. The Predators could really use some offensive playmakers. The Predators could really use some help down the middle or in their top six to add to scoring. And I know the answer would be like, Everybody wants as much scoring as you could possibly get. But if I'm a Predators fan, I am so tired of every year, you know, Predators really need more scoring. Now, I get it. This year, offensively, there's a lot to look back on and I think to be encouraged about from the standpoint of the coach and the system. Now, I still look at the roster and I say, Philip Forsberg is great. Ryan O'Reilly played great this year. He's going to be another year older. Does he really need to be your number one centerman moving forward? Gus Nyquist, he was great this year. He's 35. Is he going to repeat anything close to that next year heading into the next season? So I feel great about the coach. I feel great about the system. But if I'm a Predators fan, the idea of the annual discussion of them needing to add more offensive talent is just so bothersome to me. And look, I get it. The regime has changed. Barry Trotz is entering into his second year as general manager. There's not a point of reference yet. He's not been in the job long enough yet to figure out if things are going to change moving forward in terms of the offensive forwards and getting out of the annual conversation of them needing to have more forwards. But it feels like, Adam, the conversation that we just had, and you know, it's a different conversation from the standpoint of which player it is every year, but the general point of the conversation we just had, it feels like we've had for 25 years around here about the Predators. And if you're a Predators fan that's been around for a long time, you got to be tired of it. Like, oh my gosh, can you finally go out and find some reliable scorers? And Barry Trotz has made no bones about it, right? Like, from the moment he took over the job, I remember the day that they introduced him, and he did like what felt like 2 hours worth of media, just kind of bouncing around. And he was talking, I mean, he made no bones about it. At some point, we're going to find a franchise-changing sentiment. We never found it. At some point, we got to find a number one center. If he said it one time that day, he probably said it 50. So the intention, I know, is there. But, man, that conversation we just had, if I'm a Predators fan, it feels like we're having it every year.
Yeah, I mean, that's just been the plight of the Predators for their franchise's history. And we talked about this earlier this week. If you make a list of the highest scoring Predators drafted forwards in NHL history, or in their history rather, it's not a star-studded list. As I explained earlier this week, the highest scoring forward ever drafted by the Nashville Predators is Scott Hartnell.
Yep.
At 707 points in 1,249 games. Now, that includes his time in Philadelphia and his time in Columbus.
Just his career, yeah.
It's just his career. The top five, Hartnell, Legwand, Erat, Hornquist, and Craig Smith. That's the top five. Now, again, we know that doesn't include Forsberg, yeah, who was basically, I mean, he wasn't drafted by the team, but he was developed by the team.
Right.
But I'm talking about forwards who were drafted by the Predators. So it's been a blind spot for this organization throughout its history. They have been unable to draft that type of player. Now, they haven't had that problem on defense. They've drafted plenty of great defensemen.
Although, it's been a while since they've done that, too.
That is true, but at least they have a track record of it between Josi and Weber and Suter and Ellis and Ekholm. Yep. You know, guys who, you know, similar to Forsberg, like someone like Kimmo Tiiminen, right?
Yep.
Became a really good player playing for the Predators and playing for Barry Trotz. Same in goal. Rene, Saros, hopefully Askarov.
Yep.
You know, similar situation again. Vokoun, you know, very good defenseman who made himself a really nice career starting in Nashville. So it's just been an issue. And as I'm watching the Stanley Cup final last night, I'm like, man, if the top of the 2013 draft had fallen differently, Alexander Barkov could have been available to the Predators,
yeah,
at four. And imagine if Barkov had the same career he's had in Florida and just put him in a Predators uniform. We're not having this conversation. We're not having this conversation.
Right.
Like, it might just be the one, but at least there would be one, yeah, right? So it's something that Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette and the front office has to work to correct. And if Barry Trotz is not willing, and look, I don't begrudge him for this. If he is unwilling to get bad enough to draft those players that are available at the top of the draft where you often get these forwards, you're going to have to be aggressive in other ways. Like we talked about last year, he was trying to get into the top five.
Yep.
It didn't work, but he tried. He has to continue to do that. They have to be aggressive with all of these draft picks they have, these second round picks. They have to hit on their first round picks. We've talked about the comparison between them and the Stars with Wyatt Johnson and Logan Stankoven and yep. Jason Robertson. Like, it's something the Predators have to hit on it eventually, right? Like, they can't.
You would think. and look, I know, and we've heard from people on the text line about, you know, how do you expect the results to change when Trotz is like so ingratiated into the Predators' DNA, and he's been around for a lot of that. Now, he was around in a different role. Like, he was a coach. And, you know, he's gone on to do – like, he went to Washington, he went to New York. Like, I'm sure that there are things that he saw there and that he learned there that he's going to try to implement here. And I have no doubt, like, Barry Trotz wants to find these players. Like, he wants to find some dynamic offensive players. I know Andrew Brunette wants to find those players. So, again, the jury for this new regime is still – it's still out, and there's still a lot of more information that we've got to gather on these guys before you can come to any sort of definitive conclusion about how good or not good they're going to be at finding these forwards. So, like, this is not really a Barry Trotz, Andrew Brunette specific plight. I just know if I'm a Predators fan, we've been talking about this for 25 years. It's time for this group to find and develop some young players, some young forwards that can be true difference makers, and we'll see whether or not they'll be able to do that. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. We'll get TD's thoughts on the Trevor Lawrence contract as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.